Welcome to Royally Screwed. My name is Chris Shearer, and it's my honor to take you on a tour through some of history's greatest, worst, and bizarre rulers. On this week's episode, we're diving into the world of Scandinavian sagas to learn more about the potential life and rule of the Viking Ragnar Lothbrok. Now, I say potential life because, well, he entirely might not have existed. Granted, that's never stopped me on this show before. After all, I've done 3 episodes about King Arthur. The thing that makes placing Ragnar's existence as factual or not more difficult than someone like Arthur Pendragon is that we have people we know who historically existed who claim to be his sons. But who even was Ragnar Lothbrok? Well, according to the sagas and potential histories, he was a Danish king who led raiding parties during the early days of the Viking era. He's particularly noted for his raids in medieval England and France, with possible accounts having him being a leader in the siege of Paris of 845 CE. Whether he existed or not is potentially unknown, but his legacy would spur on generations of Vikings to continue raiding across Europe, all hoping to attain similar levels of glory and fame as Ragnar. So, how am I supposed to do a history about a guy who possibly didn't exist? Well, just like King Arthur, there are people who were possible bases for a single Ragnar figure. Christian monks, aka the historians of those times, told tales about Viking raid leaders, and some of the names they recorded may have been Gallicized, aka to make French, or Anglicized versions of the name Ragnar. For instance, the man who led the 845 siege of Paris is recorded as being named Regan Harris. But in order to do an Out of Legends episode, we also have to look at the legends surrounding Ragnar. The interesting thing about the legendary figure Ragnar Lothbrok is that he is almost made to be a direct sequel to earlier Germanic legends that would have predated his existence by at least a couple hundred years. So, I get to talk about the Saga of the Volsungs, which is an incredible story that I highly recommend to anyone who likes classic stories of dragons, cursed artifacts, and bloody tales of vengeance. It was very influential to J.R.R. Tolkien, and you can find a lot of its themes throughout The Hobbit, The Lord of the Rings, and the rest of his Middle-earth series. So, without further ado, let's begin the story. We're going back in time to the early days of the Viking Age of 9th century Northern Europe in Out of Legend, Ragnar Lothbrok. The following is an excerpt from Tale of Ragnar's Sons, translated by Ben Wagner. At that time, a king named Alla ruled over Northumbria. When he heard that a host had come to his kingdom, he summoned a huge army and went out and attacked them with overwhelming force, and there was a great and hard battle there. On the outside of his clothes, King Ragnar wore the silk tunic which Aslaug gave him at their parting. Because the defending forces were so large that no one might withstand them, nearly all his folk fell there, but he himself went 4 times right through King Alla's ranks, and no iron pierced his silk shirt. He was finally captured and placed in an enclosure full of snakes, and the snakes didn't want to come near him. King Alla saw that no iron had bitten him by day when they fought each other, and now none of the snakes wanted to injure him. He ordered the clothing which Ragnar had worn outermost that day to be stripped off him. The snakes immediately latched onto him everywhere, and he laid down his life with great valor. When the sons of King Ragnar heard the news, they went west to England and fought with King Alla. And because neither Ivar nor any of his folk would fight, and the defenders were more numerous, they suffered a defeat there and fled to their ships. With matters as they stood, they went home to Denmark. But afterwards, Ivar was in England and went to meet King Alla, and asked him for compensation for his father. And since King Alla saw that Ivar would not fight together with his brothers against him, it seemed safe to reach a settlement with him. Ivar asked the king to give him, as compensation for his father, as much land as he might span with the largest old bull's hide, because he said it would not be good for him to go home to face his brothers without a settlement. That didn't seem treacherous to Alla, and they bound themselves to this agreement. Ivar now took a raw hide and had it stretched as much as possible. He had the hide cut into the finest cord, then he split the hair side from the flesh side. Then he had the cord drawn around a flat field and marked a foundation all around the outside. He raised up strong city walls there, and this city is now called York. He made friends with all the folk of the land, and especially with the chieftains, and so it came to be that all the chieftains called him and his brothers trustworthy. Then he sent an invitation to his brothers and said that right then they would have the best chance to avenge their father if they came with a host to England. When they heard that, they called up their forces and sailed for England. Let's talk about the history of Ragnar Lothbrok according to the Scandinavian sagas. In the stories, Ragnar is said to be the son of King Sigurd Hringr, a king with dominion over Denmark and Sweden. Ragnar's father died when he was young, and the other kings who ruled in the general area started conquering sections of Sigurd Hringr's kingdom because they thought Ragnar would be too young and unfit for rule. The tale of Ragnar's sons kinda just ends with that fact there. The tale of Ragnar Lothbrok, while not necessarily saying Ragnar fought back to put his father's kingdom together, just says that Ragnar grew to be a large and strong warrior who proved himself valiantly. By the way, the tale of Ragnar Lothbrok, or the saga of Ragnar Lothbrok, is kind of the main source for Ragnar's stories and was written in Iceland in the 13th century. The tale of Ragnar's sons is almost like an abridged version of that story. We then get to hear about a king named Herod who rules over Götaland, which is southern Sweden. Herod had a daughter named Thora, and every morning, the king would give his daughter a present. One day, he decides to give her a pet snake. While the snake is initially small, it eventually grows to become monstrous in size, apparently able to lay itself entirely around Thora's apartments in Herod's castle. Apparently, the only person who could approach it was whatever poor servant was made to give the snake its daily meal, which was said to be one whole ox. Obviously, this causes Herod a great deal of distress, and he promises that any man who can kill the snake will get to marry Thora. Well, Ragnar hears of this story and decides that he's the guy for the job. In order to protect himself, instead of wearing thick armor or something to that effect, Ragnar creates a uniform of very hairy hide and dips it in boiling tar. I guess the tar hardened on the fur and created some sort of protective layering. This outfit is actually where Ragnar gets his name, as Lothbrok is Old Norse for hairy trousers. Ragnar fights the giant serpent, kills it, and marries Thora. Together, the couple have two sons, Erik and Agnar. The two sons of Ragnar would grow up to be tall and strong Vikings like their father. Unfortunately, Thora eventually gets very sick and dies. From there, we switch gears to learn about Aslaug. According to the sagas, Aslaug was the daughter of the Valkyrie Brunhildr, a Valkyrie being a female spirit in Norse myth who helps guide the souls of dead warriors to Valhalla, and the great hero Sigurd. Sigurd is one of the main characters in the saga of the Volsungs, and I will do my best to keep this brief because summarizing that particular story could actually take a while. By the way, the Volsung saga takes place somewhere around the 5th century CE, making any relationship between Sigurd and Aslaug actually impossible, even as far as fiction goes. Sigurd was born into this bloodline of great warriors who allegedly traced their origins back to the god Odin. His father Sigmund once pulled a magical sword from a tree, which had been placed there by Odin. This sword could basically cut through anything. During a later battle, Sigmund's sword was then broken by Odin. Sigurd himself was raised under the care of a man named Regin. Regin had two brothers, Utr and Fafnir. Odin, Loki, and some other gods decided one day to kill Utr, who had the ability to transform into an otter. And yes, they killed him in otter form because I guess they wanted otter for lunch. Regin's father demanded repayment for this crime. Loki repaid him with gold he took from a dwarf named Andvari. One of the pieces of gold was also a ring that, for some reason, Loki decided to curse, and that ring would bring death to its owner. Regin's other brother, Fafnir, then killed their father, transformed into a dragon, and stole Andvari's gold. Regin told this story to Sigurd and convinced him to kill Fafnir. Sigurd is gifted the magical sword of Sigmund, which was reforged and named Gram, which is Old Norse for wrath. He killed Fafnir in dragon form and took back Andvari's gold. Regin then planned to kill Sigurd and take the gold, but after tasting some of Fafnir's heart, Sigurd gained the ability to understand birds and heard them talking about Regin's plan, because I guess the guy was just talking about his plan alone aloud in front of birds. Sigurd then killed Regin and gained the gold. In another adventure, he married Brynhildr. Many more adventures were had and Sigurd was eventually killed. This is an extremely condensed version of just a single section of the Saga of the Volsungs. Anyways, we should probably get back to Ragnar. After tragedy struck Sigurd and his family, Aslaug, remember his daughter, is put in the care of a man named Heimer. Then, 400 years magically pass by. This is not said in the story. In fact, the story would make you believe that these things are happening one right after another, but 400 years have to pass in order for the rest of the story to make sense. Well, anyways. Heimer hid Aslaug in a large case meant for a harp. They then found themselves on a small farm, and the husband and wife who came to own the farm killed Heimer because they believed his harp case was filled with gold. When they opened the case, they found Aslaug instead. They adopted the girl and named her Kraka. Okay, now we can actually get back to Ragnar. While raiding in Norway, Ragnar and his crew came across the farm where Aslaug lived. Ragnar didn't believe that Aslaug was actually their daughter as she was way too beautiful. The pair flirted with each other and Aslaug left with the Viking king, still using the name Kraka. Together they had four sons, Ivar the Boneless, named so because apparently he had no bones? The sagas don't really agree on what this means. Bjorn Ironside, Vitserk, also called Halfdan in some stories, and Sigurd Snake in the Eye, named for his maternal grandfather and also apparently had the image of a snake in one eye. It should be noted that Aslaug and Ragnar didn't get married at this point in time. At some point in the future, Ragnar was visiting King Eystein in Uppsala in eastern Sweden. During the visit, Ragnar agreed to get married to Eystein's daughter, Ingebjörg. Ragnar told his men not to tell this news to Aslaug. When he finally returned home, Aslaug tried to get Ragnar to tell him what he was up to, but he didn't say anything. Eventually, Aslaug revealed that she heard about Ragnar's betrothal from some birds, because she inherited this ability from her father. She also then told Ragnar about who her parents were. Though he was surprised, Ragnar then decided to forget about Ingebjörg and marries Aslaug. When Eystein heard about the rebuff, he claimed that he and Ragnar are no longer allies. Unfortunately, Ragnar's two sons from his marriage to Thora, Eric and Agnar, decide that that would be a great time to go raiding across Sweden. When they reached Eystein's lands, he called together his citizens to stand against the raiders. When he learned the identities of Eric and Agnar, he doubled down and led his full army against the Vikings. Eric and Agnar were killed in the ensuing battle. Word reached Ragnar's lands about the deaths of his oldest sons. Unfortunately, Ragnar himself was out of town meeting with some other kings. Aslaug went to her sons and rallied them to get revenge for their half-brothers. The brothers each gave a short heroic poem about their decision to get revenge and then sailed off for Sweden. Oh yeah, I should also mention that throughout all these stories, each character, like every other page, gives a long heroic poem about what they're doing, and I guess this was a major part of the Scandinavian sagas. Aslaug commanded a group that traveled to Sweden via land and also decided to change her name to Randalin. Altogether, the family of Ragnar, minus Ragnar himself, fought against King Eystein's army and came out victorious. When they returned, Randalin told Ragnar of their exploits and also told him that they were kinda gonna keep that raiding train going by raiding south towards Italy. She then tried to get Ragnar to come along to prove that they were the greatest Vikings around. However, Ragnar decided he would actually rather raid the Kingdom of Northumbria in England, Northumbria being Northern England and a bit of Southern Scotland. Randalin then told Ragnar that he was a fool to try to raid England with so few troops while the rest of his army fought in other raids. Unfortunately, Ragnar couldn't be convinced and sailed off for England, though he took a special shirt that his wife gave him for protection. From there, we get into the passage I read before. Ragnar fought against the army of King Alla of Northumbria, got captured, and was thrown into a pit of snakes. There, he recited a very long, epic poem about all of his victories and exploits, which is recorded in the 12th century poem Krakamal. After reciting that poem, Ragnar died. His family learned of Ragnar's death and decided to seek out revenge. According to the sagas, Ivar tricked King Alla into an alliance and also founded the city of York. Also, in some of the sagas, they claim he founded London, but by London, they still mean York for some reason. York was not founded by Ivar and was actually a Roman fort before becoming a town long before this story took place. The sons of Ragnar then all came to England and defeated King Alla. The rest of the tale of Ragnar's sons goes on to explain what became of the titular sons of Ragnar and their descendants, ending by saying that via Sigurd's snake in the eye, Ragnar was the great-great-great-grandfather of King Harald Fairhair, the man who united all of Norway. This again is impossible with historical timing unless all of the generations in between had children at the age of, like, 10. Anyways, let's get into some real history. Okay, now with all of that legendary stuff out of the way, what can we say about a historical Ragnar Lothbrok? Well, like I said at the top of the show, he might not have existed. And by that I mean a singular Danish king who would father sons that would go on to become famous Vikings in England. Because Ivar the Boneless, Sigurd's Snake in the Eye, Vitserk, if Vitserk is just another name for the man Halfdan Ragnarsson, and potentially Bjorn Ironside were all real historical figures. But there's one figure who has gained a lot of cult following for potentially being the historical Ragnar Lothbrok. And that is the man who led the siege of Paris in 845 CE, Regin Harris. So who was Regin Harris? Well, that we also don't know. Okay. Well, good show, pack it in everyone. No, obviously I'm not ending the episode there. Also, I want to be fully transparent about something. It was at this point in my research over Ragnar that I actually realized I had fully covered the 845 Siege of Paris in the episode I did over the Viking leader Rollo, which was episode 78. Maybe if that had been back in like episode 20, I would be less worried, but that episode didn't even come out a full year ago. So that means I have to ask myself, am I above retreading grounds I already tread? And after a lot of thinking, I decided I'm not above that. I'm in the last 10 episodes of regular broadcasted shows, let me be lazy this once. Besides, one of the most listened to episodes of this show is just me reciting the Julio-Claudian family tree so I wouldn't have to do that again in later Julio-Claudian episodes. And then I did that anyways. So let's learn about the Siege of Paris. At this point in time, the Frankish Empire established by Charlemagne had recently been divided in three. The portion containing Paris was known as West Francia, which was made up of about two-thirds of modern-day France, northern Spain, Luxembourg, and western Belgium. Charlemagne had been able to repel early Viking raids. His successors were less capable. In 845, West Francia was ruled by Charles II, aka Charles the Bald, who was the grandson of Charlemagne. His two brothers were the leaders of Middle Francia and East Francia. Things were actually going alright with them for the moment, though that would eventually change, but that's not a part of this story. A few years before the attack, in 841, Reginharis had actually been gifted land from Charles the Bald, which was situated around modern-day Tourcoing, Belgium. Eventually, Reginharis fell out of favor with Charles and lost his control over that area. I would assume it was because he was still a Viking at the end of the day and continued raiding. From there, Reginharis disappeared until 845 when he decided to lead an army of 120 ships, allegedly holding around 5,000 Viking raiders, up the River Seine to Paris. The massive raid began in March and the party arrived at Paris on Easter Sunday, which happened to be the 29th of March that year. Though Paris was a city on a river, it was not the massive, all-important French city we know of it today. It wasn't even the capital of West Francia. However, it did happen to be located right by the Abbey of Saint-Denis. Charles seemed to be much more worried about the fate of the abbey over the fate of Paris. Luckily for the Vikings, and I guess Charles if he cared more about the abbey, this meant that Paris was not as well guarded as it could be. Unfortunately, a plague broke out among the Vikings while they laid siege. Apparently, some of the French prisoners the Vikings took insisted that the plague was a curse from God, and, maybe by some divine prank, the brief spot of plague dissipated after the Vikings took a break to respect Christianity. That story might not actually be true if you think about it too much. But like I said, the city itself was not as well defended as it could be. Even with the Vikings taking a break for God, the soldiers of Paris were woefully unprepared to deal with the threat. However, the Vikings had also not taken Paris after a while's worth of besieging the city. In order to please everyone, Charles paid Reginharis and his soldiers over 5,600 pounds of gold and silver, a little over 2,500 kilograms. While Charles was later criticized for this move, it did in fact get the Vikings to leave Paris alone for the time being. However, it also didn't stop them from attacking other towns and abbeys closer to the English Channel on their voyage home. And from there, Reginharis once more disappears, this time for good. Although there are Christian tales told by monks from the time that apparently Reginharis returned to his king, Horik I of Denmark, and cried about the power of Christian saints bringing a plague upon his men. Another figure who may or may not have been a basis for Ragnar Lothbrok was Jarl Ragnvald Eysteinsson of Norway. Like Ragnar, there are a lot of conflicting sources over Ragnvald, but we know he lived sometime in the mid-9th century, which is the prime Ragnar era. He was the first Jarl of Møre in Norway and a relative of Harald Fairhair, the guy I mentioned earlier who was said to be a descendant of Ragnar. Ragnvald's whole deal is that he may have helped establish a Norse presence on the Orkney Islands off the northern coast of Scotland. The Norse Jarls would rule over the Orkneys from about 872 until 1472 when the Jarldom was officially absorbed into Scotland. Okay, so not England, but at least a major force on the island of Great Britain. Some Irish sources mention a historical figure named Ragnall, which could be a Gaelicized form of Ragnar, who some historians believe to be a historical basis for Ragnar Lothbrok. However, my research into that only pulls up a guy named Ragnall Í Iwár. Now that Í Iwár, ironically, is Irish for descendant of Ívar, here referring to Ívar the Boneless, whose raids in Ireland would result in a powerful Norse Gael dynasty forming. So, ironically, a historical basis for Ragnar Lothbrok could actually be from a descendant of a man who would later be called his son. Though Ragnar may not have been fully real, other people and events in his sagas were, and I want to take a brief moment to talk about a figure mentioned in them who did exist, King Ella of Northumbria. Very little is known about the King of Northumbria before his death. Based on the vague histories recorded by Anglo-Saxon sources, we've been led to believe that Ella usurped the throne from his brother, King Osbert of Northumbria. Based on one account from an English monk living a couple centuries after Ella's death, the king ruled as a tyrant and stole multiple areas of land from the Christian church in order to expand his rule. He was forced into action in 866 when the Great Heathen Army arrived in England. The Great Heathen Army was a massive force of Vikings that would end up conquering a great deal of Anglo-Saxon Britain. Among their leaders were said to be Ívar the Boneless and the man I believe to be the basis for his brother, Hvítserk, Halfdan Ragnarsson. By late November, the Viking army had managed to capture the city of York, which would provide a background for the sagas saying Ívar founded the city. York was the capital of Northumbria, meaning that this was a massive deal. This seizure of a major Anglo-Saxon city provided the catalyst for Ella to make amends with his brother, you know, the guy he kicked out, in order to form a coalition against the Great Heathen Army. The combined forces of the Northumbrian kings marched on York in late March of 867, where they were met with annihilation. Both Ella and Osbert were killed in the battle, with the Viking army now fully occupying and maintaining power in Northumbria via a puppet king they installed. Eventually, the puppet king would be kicked out after a revolution within Northumbria, and Halfdan Ragnarsson would step in to fully assume control over of York, thus bringing a portion of England actually under control of a supposed son of Ragnar. Whether or not Ragnar Lothbrok was a real human being is actually beside the point as we get to the end of this episode. Someone named Ragnar Lothbrok didn't exist. However, the spirit of Ragnar was. So, what does that mean? Stories about this guy predated the writing of the sagas. They were possibly used as propaganda for the massive invasion that brought over the Great Heathen Army. I can just imagine a Viking campsite in the mid to late 9th century in Northumbria, with the raiders gathered around a campfire telling stories of a great Viking warrior. Stories to rival the old legend of Sigurd Fafnirsbane. And he was killed by the tyrant King Ella, and that's why we're here to fight. And you know that guy leading us, Ívar? They say he's Ragnar's son. That would make him descended from gods and dragon slayers. That's why I'll always throw my lot behind him. If Ragnar Lothbrok was not a singular man, then he was the ever-present symbol of the Viking era. The belief among the Norse and Danes that the British Isles in northern France held riches and land that they could call a new home traced themselves back to the real history of Regin Harris and the fictional sagas of Ragnar. Stories of possible Ragnars like Regin Harris would lead to Rollo raiding Paris a few decades later and ultimately becoming the progenitor of the Normans in France. The supposed sons of Ragnar would change the face of England, Scotland, and Ireland for centuries to come. He was the Viking era. Also, as a side note, I want to say that I haven't watched most of the History Channel series Vikings, but Ragnar is the main character in that, where they try to paint a historical picture around his legends. From what I've gleaned, the show plays very fast and loose with history, with Rollo being Ragnar's brother and kings who lived decades apart from each other being contemporaries. Maybe I'll get back into it at some point and report on how I like the show later. Also, this is tentatively the beginning of a new saga to replace the Julio-Claudian saga. Before I decided to end regularly scheduled episodes of the podcast at episode 100, I wanted to continue telling a long-form story of a single family over every 5 episodes. So while it may not be every 5th episode, I will say it definitely won't be continued in episode 100, look forward to more stories from the Ragnarsson saga at some vague point in the future. After all, his sons were real people, and they each have their own stories to be shared. But for now, that's it for this week's episode of Royally Screwed. I hope you enjoyed the journey. Be sure to subscribe to the show and tell a friend all about it. Next time, we're going to be looking at 3 different pharaohs of Egypt. You know the pyramids of Giza, some of the most pristine historical relics in the known world? Did you ever also wonder about the pharaohs those were built for? Well, you'll get to find out as we talk about the time period surrounding the reigns of pharaohs Khufu, Khafre, and Menkaure. I hope you'll join me then for another topsy-turvy look into history's most interesting rulers.